This talk is about new SMB features in Wireshark. So I'll talk about POSIX extensions, decryption, and other Wireshark-based tools. So who am I? Aurélien Aptel. I work at SUSE Linux from Germany. I'm also a Samba team member, and I mostly worked on open source SMB stuff, including the Linux kernel client, Samba, user space client server, and client implementation, and Wireshark.
Okay. Yeah,
should I?
Yeah.
So what is Wireshark? So it's a network sniffer and analyzer. It's open source. It's under GPL v2. And it's available on most platforms, so you can download it on Windows, Mac, Linux, and other systems, BSD, whatever you like. So usually for sniffing, for Unix at least, you use TCP dump. So that's a simple command line tool, which is practical to have on embedded system. For example, it doesn't have much dependencies, so it's really simple to use. So the dash S flag is for, so that's how you would call it. This flag is for saying you don't want to truncate packets. This is to say the trace name you want to write. And you can have some filtering here, very simple stuff. So this is for only getting the SMB traffic on port 4445. So you can also do the capturing from Wireshark. You don't have to use those things. Although, yeah, I often end up using it because you can run it anywhere and it's very practical. So Wireshark can do captures. It has the same filtering as TCP dump because it uses the same code in the back. So this lib pickup and stuff. But it has, so it has two kind of filters. It has capture filters and display filters. And it's the display filters which are interesting in Wireshark. They're very advanced. So usually I just capture everything and I filter in Wireshark. So when I work and debug stuff, I just filter for SMB 1, 2. So this also includes 3 and above. DNS and Kerberos, sometimes it's useful. So it turns out Windows also can do natively network traces. I learned this recently. I'm not very good with Windows itself, so many things I don't know about. So apparently you can do this. This actually works across reboots. So you can run this reboot and it will actually store the trace from the boot. And you have to run this to stop the trace. So it generates this ETL file, which doesn't actually, Wireshark cannot open this. So you have to open it through netmon, then save it as pcap, and this way you can open it on in Wireshark. Otherwise, there are also, you can install Wireshark in Windows, but that's more work. And yeah. So the analyzing part. So I don't know if, I guess most of you are already familiar with Wireshark. So, I mean, I'll go quickly on this. So this is where you would put your display filter. These are the summary of the packets. And this is a detailed view of each packet. So you have for each layer, so Ethernet, IP, TCP, and then you can see SMB if you click on the SMB packet. And then at the bottom, you have the X dump. So Wireshark does the reassembling, so you only see the good stuff. If a large packet is split or if there's some retransmission, you just see the SMB layer, if you want to. So each filter does more than filtering. They're called dissectors in Wireshark. And there's some logic in them. They keep track of context. And so there are two dissectors. There's one for SMB1 and one for SMB2 and above. Both of them are mostly written by Ronnie Salberg, who works at Red Hat at the moment. So one of the particularities in Wireshark is it has generated fields, which are always displayed in brackets. Those little brackets here. This means this is not information inside the packet, but it's something that has been either computed or kept track of from a previous packet and such. So you can see, for example, this is a create request packet. If you look at the SMB2 header, you can see the tree ID. So in the packet itself, you will only have this number. But Wireshark shows you the actual tree name and all this information when the tree was opened and such. And you can actually click on those things usually, and it will make you jump to the packet. So yeah, that's what I said. The filtering is discoverable. So if you click on any field, if you right click, you have this apply as filter selected, and it will just pop up there. So you could have searched for just the tree ID, but this way it will show you all tree connections connected to this specific tree, all the packets belonging to this thing. You can do this for file names and such. It's pretty powerful. So some of the new things that has been added over the year, 2 years I guess. So Wireshark can now decrypt SMB3 traffic. So this is since last February. Next version will have 3.11. It only does CCN, not GCN yet, at the moment. And you need to provide some stuff for it to work. So you need to provide the session key, which is not always easy. I'll talk about this later. The trace must have the initial connection step, so that means it must have the negotiate protocol and session setup. The reason why is SMB3.11. For generating the decryption keys, it uses the pre-authentication hash, which is computed from those steps. So without this, you cannot get the hash and properly generate the keys. So if you don't want to have the whole session sometime because you just want to capture a specific time in your thing, I suggest you capture the initial steps, you stop capturing, then later on you do other captures of what you want, and then you can merge traces together. So Wireshark comes with multiple command line tools which you can use, including one called MergeCap. So this one, you just provide multiple traces and it will generate one traces with everything concatenated.
Six
something.
So 2.6.
I believe.
Not 2.5.1, but 2.6.
I'm not sure about this. But yeah. So how to get the session key? So on Linux, you have to compile with this. I've added this flag. So you have. Yeah, you need to recompile the kernel. So it's not always practical. It's disabled by default because it's quite unsafe. So the keys are printed in the kernel log, like this. So you just copy the session ID and then the session key here. You put it, so you go in Wireshark in Edit, Preferences, Protocols, SMB2. You get this thing. There's a Edit button here with the second session key. Blah, blah. You go there and then you can add the mapping for, so this session will have this session key, and then Wireshark will figure out the rest. And for Windows, then I have no idea how to do this. So if someone has any clue about it, that would be great.
Do you know about SMB client? Is there a way to get this information?
I don't think so. I had to add printfs to do it. So
yeah.
So you can do all the GUI stuff here. You can also do it through the command line. There's a flag here where you can basically set any preferences of Wireshark. So you just put the session ID here, comma, and then session key, and then your trace. And it will directly open open up decrypted. So I should be able to do a little demo. I mean, I have screenshots in case the demo doesn't work, so. Can you read the file? Yeah. All right. Ah. Okay. So this is the kernel sources. I'll just show you where the option is. So you have to search for SIFS. You can do this by doing slash and sips. You can press number one to jump to the first result. So these are all the sifs options. So if you go down, you should see this one. So this one is enabled here. Once this is done, just save. You can just let's assume I do make, right? So I'll just run the freshly built kernel, and I will mount. I have a little knock box in the other room with a server running. So I will mount it, encrypt it, and yeah, we'll see what it does. So the system is booting, and once it's done, it will mount. It will call the command earlier. So this is the debug stuff, so there's a lot of messages, but if you go up, you can see here. I'll copy paste this somewhere. So now I'll just I'll create something in the okay, I've written a new file. I shut down now. So I put the keys somewhere. Now I call Wireshark. Oof. Okay. So So first of all, I'll show you. So this is just a script that presents the information from the file. It generates the command line you have to pass to Wireshark. It's the same information here. You see, this is the session key from here, and this is just this one. Okay, so nothing crazy going on. I've saved the network traffic of what I did in a temporary file. So you can see the traffic has been decrypted. You can see here when I echoed into myfile.txt, that's the file. Alright. So this was a 3.11 mount. So since I had to implement the pre-authentication hashing thing, I decided to also add it to the fields. So you can actually see it here for each step, which can be useful for people implementing it. You can double check if you're doing it properly. So another thing which we worked on is the Linux extension. So this is not yet upstream because extensions are not final yet. So if you want to check it out, you have to look at my GitHub. So I'll just show you quickly what some of the fields are added. So in the negotiate protocol, you have a new capability called POSIX extension. This has been covered by Steve, maybe we're in there, I don't know. So if you do a create on a file, you can add this POSIX context, which will have the POSIX mod bits. So here, for example, I create a file and I want to have it set with
131 in octo. So that's the last field down there. Here. If you do a find, there's a new info level which will have, it's called POSIX info, and so for each result you will have some fields which are not available usually. So on this particular screenshot you don't see it, but you will have mod bits and other stuff. So there's a wiki page with all the new stuff that was added, which you can see for more detail. So some of the other new things, better parsing of the file system attributes, couple of fixes of leveled info, and there was a bug also which if you open the share root, which has an empty name, some of the context wasn't properly saved, so yeah, that was fixed as well. So Wireshark also has a command line version called T-Shark. You just run it like this. You pass the capture. This will print the summary view, which is usually the middle view in Wireshark. And with dash capital V, it will show you the detailed view. So combining those two things, I came up with this tool called SMBCMP, which will diff two traces. So this is a screenshot of what it looks like. I can probably demo this. Sorry, what? No, they all still show up as different. I'll show you. So this one is pretty cool because it's decrypting at the same time. It's two different decryption key, but once decrypted, the protocol is the packets are pretty similar. So you have one packet on the left, one trace on the left, one trace on the right, and in the middle it's the detailed view diffed. So if for some reason the packets are not synchronized, for example, you have something previously on the right trace which is not on the left, and then you know they don't sync up, you can move each cursor independently. Well, in this case, it doesn't really make sense, but you can do this. So you can see here one of the differences. The security is on one side, so the red stuff is from the left, and the green stuff is from the right. You can see it went from being required to just enabled. And that's something you would have a hard time to see with just two Wireshark windows, you know, clicking and expanding every single field, and it just takes forever, and it's horrible.
Is this a Linux-only tool, or do you have a Windows version?
Yeah, for now it's Linux-only, I guess. Yeah.
There's a netmon. Really? Netmon doesn't do a trio. It was cut off a few ones.
So you can see here the timestamps. For example, the time taken to from the request to the response is different here, and it shows up in the diff. That could be a good improvement to do, just remove all those things you don't want to see usually. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
That would be a good improvement, like selecting a bunch of fields you don't want to see in the diff. So I've. So this is a completely independent thing. There's a link here. You can get it from there. It's not linked to Wireshark at all. I'm just calling T-Shark in the background. There's no crazy thing going on. How much time I have left?
A lot.
Really?
You're the end of the day. There's nothing.
No, okay.
You're just between us and dinner.
Yeah.
You have 23 minutes.
Oh, wow, okay. I think I just rushed through all my stuff. because that's the last thing, basically. So, yeah. So a couple of words about Wireshark, if you want to get involved. It's all based around Git and Gerrit. Gerrit is like a web UI. It's like if you want to run something similar to GitHub with all the pull requests and stuff, but independent of GitHub, then there's this thing called Gerrit. I believe it's developed by Google. They use it for Chrome, I think. So in order to make a change, you have to make this Gerrit account on the Wireshark website. Once this is done, you can clone using your account. From there, there's a couple of Git hooks which will add for every time you commit something, it will add. It's called a change ID. It's like a thing at the end of your messages. It generates some sort of hash there, and every time you make a new version of your changes, this thing doesn't change, so they know you're just iterating on the same change, basically, this way. So anyway, yeah, so you have those two scripts you have to copy for hooks. So you check out a branch, you do your stuff. It mostly all happens in one file called. So there's a directory for all the sectors, and the SMB2 one is the file for this is this one. Packet SMB2.c. So you commit, you possibly multiple commits. Once you're done, you want to submit it for review. So you push it like this. You put a topic here. You can put anything you want here. It doesn't have to be the same thing as that. And then it will show up, like all the reviewer will get an email, and there's a web thing I can show you. It looks like this. The topic is here. You can see all the changes here. So once the reviewer approve them, you will have a little check thing here. And they'll get picked up eventually, merge, if you're lucky. It's not that hard to get stuff committed. People are pretty helpful there. So if someone comments on it and you have to redo something, you just rebase, commit, do your changes. And since the change ID thing I talked about earlier keeps on being the same, this thing will just update with the new version every time. So yeah, it's pretty easy to do. So yeah, that's it. That was quick. Any questions?
So yeah. Wireshark in general, like how paranoid should I be in terms of people being able to potentially commit and put change protocol cracking code that has potentially latent fuckable code bugs? So then they can, if I have run the latest version of code, so someone can send me a trace and I open it. Right?
Yeah, this has happened many times.
Okay,
yeah, Wireshark is not very good.
Is there a way I can open Wireshark and say to disable all of them except the SMB one?
Disable all what?
All the departments.
No, I mean, possibly the SMB one would be vulnerable as well.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, usually you're not supposed to run.
No, I
know. Yeah, it's not a very safe program, I think. Yeah.
Okay, so I should be paranoid.
I guess, yeah. Okay. If you accept stuff from the internet via a form or something, yeah definitely. Run into some sort of container.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, about the alignment between the main that is doing the Wireshark and the node on the screen are defining the protocol of SMB. For example, if you show fine, and SMB says that it is SMB, it is going to SMB. And the question is, is there any plan to align the screen together?
So the initial writer of the thing, Ronnie, picked those names. I had the same thought, like, why is it different?
A lot of it was done before we had documentation.
Okay.
So
I guess we could fix it. I'm sure someone is expecting it to be this way now, and there's like...
It's okay to fix it, or if people follow the policy because they are used to the...
I'm okay with it. I'm sure some people will complain. Right? There's always people who complain, you know.
There was a lot of work done to try to come up with names before we had documentation. So before before 2009, really, we had no documentation. We had to just invent stuff when we took it apart of the wire. Mm-hmm. So that's where a lot of the names came from. That was true for SMB2, it's true for the authentication protocols.
Mm-hmm.
It goes way back that we had to invent our own names. And in some cases, the names you see are referring to older documentation, so OS2 documentation for a lot of the SMB stuff that eventually got proper names from Microsoft later on.
All right. Any other question? Okay, that's it.